What was it you needed me to do again? Ooh, no. Tap dancing really isn't in my job description as a pastor's wife. But I can juggle. Oh, that's right. My role changes almost daily, sometimes by the minute. I'm chief baker, Bible teacher, guest speaker, hostess, greeter, counselor, and more, on top of being my husband's confidant, wife, and mother of our children. Do I have time for myself? Not really.
Well, perhaps you or a woman in ministry you know can relate to that feeling of being overloaded. And just what is the role of a pastor's wife in your church? That's the question we're going to explore on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. I'm John Fuller, joined by our host, Reverend H.B. London, Jr. And H., I know your wife, she is a precious gem. Did she ever feel like she was being pulled in so many different directions as a pastor's wife, like we heard just a moment ago?
You know, John, we'll talk about that more at the end, but I'm honest when I say this, that in the first, you know, we were in pastoral ministries 31 years, and so in those first probably 10 years, she was pulled and stuffed into a hole, a round hole, as a square peg might be. But in the later years, she found out what her niche was and what her gifts were, and she found fulfillment in that. And really, it is the pastor's wives in the mid-stages of their ministry that so often suffer, you know, the reality of unrealistic expectations and all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as an aside, I just need to say we're delighted to have you, John Fuller, as our co-host today. I mean, we're bringing in the first team.
Listen, H., you know I love you, and it's just great to be in here with
you. As host of The Daily, we're delighted to have you here. So, you know, we really need to acknowledge that every pastor's wife is different, and that's why we should never allow certain expectations, even from the pastor, to determine what that wife's role should be in the ministry. And, you know, John, the thing I found, you know, I joke about this in some of the presentations I make. There's some pastor's wives that come out of the womb looking for a guy in a blue suit and a new Bible. but there are others, you know, second career pastors' wives that had no idea
they
that
didn't
this
sign
was
up for
happen.
This deal.
Not at all. And then there are others who just kind of go along as they're asked to go along. But there are others, and I deal with them, who are so angry that they can't even stand going to church. So, I mean, there's a wide range of emotions and activities that pastors' wives find themselves in. But what we're trying to do on this edition is to say to these pastors' wives, just take a deep breath, enjoy it.
Well, our first guest today is Lisa Young, and she's the wife of Ed Young, senior pastor at Fellowship Church in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Lisa often speaks with Ed during special weekend messages, and she's co-authored and contributed to several of his books. And she also hosts a women's event at Fellowship Church called Flavor, which helps reveal a woman's true value and worth in God's eyes. Lisa and Ed Young have been married for 24 years and have four children.
Lisa, I know that you and your husband, Ed, pastor a mega church and really a big church, Fellowship Church in Dallas. And I also know that we're talking to a lot of pastors' wives right now whose husbands have probably never pastored a church of more than 100. But I also know that the role of the pastor's wife is pretty much the same wherever one finds themselves. Have you ever defined what it is to be a pastor's wife?
Yes, and I truly believe that definition is not based on the size of your church. It's based on the role that you play as not necessarily a pastor's wife, but the wife of the pastor. And for me, I am Ed's wife first, and we've pastored churches of different sizes. The need for my responsibilities has been different in each place. But I will say this, what I do in the church as far as my role is not based on, I guess, preconceived notions of the pastor's wife. I believe biblically I should act within the giftedness that God has given me. So if I were expected to sing or play the piano, our church would be in huge trouble. So I use the gifts that God's given me, and I think that's biblical, to fulfill that role, and it's been a great role.
And we a lot of times we say to pastors' wives, do what you do best most often, and you'll be more fulfilled.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
You know, when you and Ed are at Fellowship Church now, and you mentioned that you've not always been at a mega church, but did you ever find yourself with Ed such a strong personality and so gifted as he is, radio and television and books and conferences and all that kind of thing? Did you ever find yourself just kind of standing in the shadows, so to speak, wondering what you were going to do next or what was going to happen next in your family?
Absolutely. I think it's easy anytime you're married to a strong leader and someone who's up front a lot, you do find yourselves in the shadows. And you know, I often say laughingly, I'm either Ed's wife or I'm Laurie Landra Liebeth EJ's mother. I mean, I'm always referred to something like that. And so I could be in the shadow in a lot of ways. But I choose, again, using those gifts that God's given me, and I find my place in that way. And I'm very blessed because Ed applauds those gifts in my life. He very much appreciates the role that I bring to his life. As a strong leader, he appreciates the feminine side, what I have to offer as far as ideas and my perspective. And so there have been seasons where I truly felt in the shadows, and I struggled with it, but I didn't stay there in that struggle. So, you know, as far as how I got out of it, I think more than anything, it goes back to just using those gifts. And I find that when I'm not using the gifts that God's given me, I'm being disobedient. And I had a real struggle with that because I enjoyed the shadow. I liked being behind the scenes. I didn't want, you know, that upfront play. But yet I had a huge epiphany about 2.5 years ago that I truly was being disobedient to the Lord and how I was using my gifts. And that seems crazy as far as being in a church the size of Fellowship Church. We have locations, 5 locations in Dallas-Fort Worth as well as 1 in Miami. And you go, wow, Lisa, were you just not showing up? What was happening? No, I was what you would consider a good pastor's wife. I think I was a good Christian woman, but I don't think I was fulfilling that role that God had intended me to do in the church. And that kind of brought me out of the shadows, so to speak.
You know, one of the things that go on at Fellowship Church is something that you're very much involved in. It's every month you have an organization called Flavor that ministers to women. And I know one of your passions is to help women find their true value and identity. How do women get so sidetracked from the best things that God has for them to a lesser place or to a place of depression or where they're feeling like a victim or whatever? How do we keep women from getting into that mindset?
Well, HB, you have hit on a huge, huge area of, I think, depravity for women. I think women struggle more than anything with their place in this world. And so often women try to find their identity in other things. They try to find their identity in possessions, maybe the security of a man, all of that. And those are things that are great parts of our lives, but they're not what gives us our identity. It's truly finding ourselves in the Lord that gives us that identity. And I think we could easily blame culture for putting so many options out there for women to chase, but I don't think it's any different now than it has been for thousands of years. Women still face the same struggles, but I think they get sidetracked with some of the things that culture dictates. You know, we chase the kids, we're revolving our lives around activities, around achievement of, you know, socioeconomic levels, all these different things. And when it comes down to it, those things become mini gods. I hate to equate it to idol worship, but it really does. I mean, we just chase after it in such a way that it takes away from our relationship with God. And so when you mentioned Flavor, you just brought a huge smile to my face because this was indeed the thing that God led me to do for the women of Fellowship Church, and I believe for women around the world, to understand that they are uniquely gifted, and not just for giftedness' sake, but to do something that can change their world. And God has strategically placed them in their families, in their businesses, in their communities to make a difference. And if I can just get one woman to grab hold of that, which I believe God's touching many women, then we've reached success.
You know, Lisa, a lot of pastors' wives fall into that trap. They, whether it's a big church or a little church, a lot of pastors' wives work outside the home, not just because they need the money, which they probably do, but because they want to establish their own identity. They want to do something that gives them a sense of purpose and fulfillment as well. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I just hate to see pastors' wives burn the candle at both ends just to find identity.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the thing that you have to ask yourself, though, again, you mentioned that sometimes they have to work out of necessity, providing an income. But I grew up, HB, in a home where the local church was the center of our lives. I'm so thankful for the upbringing that my parents gave me. I became a Christian at a young age. My mom became a Christian at the same time I did. And so we became entrenched in the local church. My sister and I, everything we did was about, you know, God's house. And so I believe even if Ed was not, you know, if I wasn't a pastor's wife and Ed wasn't in the ministry, I know that I would have our family revolving around the only entity that God established, the only institution that Jesus put his life out there for, which is the local church. And so, you know, I just want women, especially pastors' wives, to know that even if you work outside the home, this is the focus and the purpose. The church is the hope of the world because we have the message of Christ.
You know, that's really true. And I think sometimes pastors' wives lose track of that because the pressures on them are so great, and which leads to the next thought. You know, in talking to pastors' wives as much as I do and on our clergy care line here at Focus on the Family and when I'm doing conferences and other things, pastors' wives say to me, you know, HB, it's not that which is expected of me. I mean, I know that they're church services and I'm going to do this and do that and use my gifts, but the thing that gets me is the unrealistic expectations that the things that people just put on us and put on me specifically that really have no basis. In fact, either they've had a pastor's wife who did those things and I don't or whatever. But did you ever put pressure on yourself in those early days of Ed's ministry, in your early days? Did you ever put any pressure on yourself to play a certain role just so people would see that you're this wonderful pastor's wife and you're making your mark, so to speak?
I truly don't think I did. And I have a little inroad to maybe the balance that we should have as pastor's wives because Ed is the son of a pastor and his dad has pastored large churches. And ever since I've known Ed, he's been in ministry with his parents. So I had a great role model in his mother. And so I'm very thankful for that. And a lot of people don't have that at their disposal. But I learned a lot about balance from her. And, you know, even when our church was younger, Ed, I hate to say he was a selfish person, but in a good way, he did not want me to be the iconic pastor's wife. He wanted me, and I think, again, this is the way it should be, he wanted me to be his wife. And then what I got to do in the church or what role I played in the church came after that. So I'm first his wife and the mother of the kids, and then I'm a pastor's wife.
So what do you say, Lisa, to the pastor's wives out there whose husbands do expect them to be the iconic pastor's wife?
They need to have a conversation. No, really and truly, I can tell you that that is a big deal for the husband to have the right perspective on what's expected from his wife. Ed does a newcomers class at Fellowship Church where anyone who joins Fellowship Church, they go through a newcomers class in order to achieve membership. And as many years as Ed taught this class and now others teach this class, he always said that the greatest message that he would ever give, the greatest sermon he would ever preach would be the sermon of our family where people could just see the dynamic of our family and that it was healthy. And because of that, he said, I'm not going to know all of your names. Lisa and I are not available 24/7. We have boundaries. And by doing that up front, even when our church had 100 people, he said those things.
Yeah.
And so that gave us the freedom to be who we needed to be. And I think it built the platform and the foundation for the healthy family dynamic that we have right now. And frankly, I would attribute that to how much our children love the ministry.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. You mentioned you had four children, and you know you're in a great big church, and sometimes pastors' kids can get lost in a mega church when mm-hmm. they're in a smaller church. They're on stage all the time. You mentioned that your children love the ministry and love the church. How did that happen? How did you establish that kind of healthy relationship with your family and the church?
Well, I think it goes back to Ed's leadership in that the church was not his mistress. The church is a beautiful part of our lives, and we're a Christian family first, not a pastor's family. And so our role in the church obviously is very strong, but I'm not there every time the church doors open, even when our church was smaller. And I think it's very tempting for pastors and their wives to feel like they need to have their kids there all the time, every time there's any event. And we did not do that. Our priority was weekend worship, and anything after that was like a cafeteria thing. We would pick and choose. It's interesting, too, HB. Several years ago, each year we have a Creative Church Conference at Fellowship Church for pastors and leaders. And several years ago, Ed and I did a breakout session for pastors and their families, for pastors and their wives, to just ask questions, any type of question they wanted to ask to myself and a few of the staff members. And we'd asked our daughter if she would share, and she was 17 at the time. She's now 22. And so I asked her ahead of time, I said, you know, LeeBeth, what is your take on being a preacher's kid? And LeeBeth is one of these people who sees the cup half empty, so I really expected a big critique and a lot of baggage. And shockingly, she named very quickly the great aspects of being a preacher's kid. She said, I get to see life change. I hear stories that some people don't get to hear because I know the inside of when someone accepts Christ as their Savior. She talked about the opportunities that we get to go and do certain things that other people don't do. And instead of saying something negative, like my dad's not at home on the weekends, she said, my dad gets to come and do things with us during the week that other dads don't get to do. So I really believe it's perspective. If I have a healthy perspective, I'm going to build that into the kids. But if I'm bitter about the church or dread the church and what it's about, then the children will pick that up as well.
We're doing a lot of switching and changing here, but I also know that you and Ed are very proactive about being healthy and maintaining an active lifestyle. And we deal with so many pastors who are sedentary and who don't have, and you know, they just kind of, I don't know what I'm calling couch potatoes necessarily, but you know, they don't exercise, they don't eat right, they're not taking care of themselves. And as a result of that, their ministry and their families, they suffer because of that.
Yeah, several years ago, Ed and I did a book, and I actually did a cookbook called Body for God. And we just talked about what 1 Corinthians 6:20 says. It says, honor God with your bodies. And for far too long, you know, from the pulpit, you've heard talk about alcohol abuse or drug abuse or all these different vices, but nobody would talk about gluttony. And it's huge. And I think we would be crazy not to think that if we keep our bodies healthy, it has a great result. It's something that God wants for us. He has given us this one and only body. It's the temple in which He dwells. And so we have to take care of this one and only gift that He's given us. So we're very much into health. He and I both work out. We try to eat healthy. We find it getting harder and harder the older we get. But we also see how important it is the older we get, because we know that we've invested in longevity. And Ed and I hope that we have years and years and years to come in ministry. And so it's vital that we take care of our bodies. And there's a direct correlation between not taking care of your body and stress levels, mood levels, depression, and overall, you know, health. So it's important.
Hey, one last question, Lisa. The time
sure.
has gone really fast. You know, it's obvious that you and Ed are having fun at Fellowship Church and you enjoy the challenge and God's blessing you. I watch Ed on television from time to time as I'm traveling and even when I'm home. And, you know, he has a uniqueness that most pastors don't have. But, you know, as a pastor's wife, you're doing your thing and you're having a certain success because you've got flavor and you've got other things and you're writing books. But there are a lot of pastors' wives out there who are listening to us right now, and they feel burned out and they feel lonely. They feel isolated. And in fact, if it was really up to these ladies, they'd probably walk away from the ministry tomorrow if they could. What do you say to somebody like that? You've probably seen them. I know you've talked to them. We deal with them every day here at Focus on the Family. What do you say to them?
I would tell them first and foremost that you're not alone. I spoke with someone a few weeks ago, a pastor's wife, and she said, this has been one of the worst years of my life. And she's not referring to any specific thing. She's referring just to life in general. And I know that it happens because it's happened to me. I was in a very deep spiritual drought several years ago, and I didn't think about quitting the ministry. The thought that went through my head was, what would it be like to do something else? And I tried to picture myself in a whole nother world. And so perspective is everything. There are so many people who go through this, but the operative word there is through. And each of us have times of drought in our life, and I think there's several things that brought me out of it that I can share with you. First of all, I just got still before God and said, God, you know what? I need to rest. I need to have a better perspective on this. And rest is very important. Usually when you're troubled like that, rest is something that's not coming easy. And so trying to just back down on some of the obligations and rest, physical rest. And then I just journaled some things. I wrote down my thoughts. I put things on paper and just cried out to God. That's so basic, but yet it is so healthy. And then I just said, God, you show me. One of the things that he showed me in that was, Lisa, write down my deliverances for you. Write down my provisions. And so I started journaling things that God had done for me. And when you start naming all those faithful moments that God has shown up in a big way, and you just stick with it, because at first you may not think of all these things, but they will slowly come. And then I read the Psalms, because there's so much drought in the Psalms, but then there is so much of a pouring from God. So those things, you know, they're not alone. But also, I would say connect with other pastors' wives. One of the things that I love about going to conferences, about programs such as yours, is that you can connect with other pastors' wives. And my deepest friendships are with other women in ministry. And I have a safety there. I have an understanding with them. And there is such camaraderie. And you're welcome to give, the Fellowship Church website or my email address. I want people to know that there is help out there, because this is a fabulous life. And I don't want anyone to steal from it.
Lisa, thank you. We'll make all that information available. And our guest has been Lisa Young. She and her husband, Ed, Fellowship at Fellowship Church in the heart of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And to you pastors who are listening, if you have a Sunday off and you really want to go to a place that's kind of cutting edge, and I would really recommend that. And so, Lisa, thank you. Hope you'll tell your husband hello from us at Focus on the Family. And thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you.
All right. God bless you.
God bless you.
And that's Lisa Young joining us on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. If you'd like to learn more about Lisa and Ed's ministry at Fellowship Church in Dallas-Fort Worth, their website is simply fellowshipchurch.com. I'm John Fuller, and our host is Reverend H.B. London, Jr. And I was intrigued by something that Lisa shared during that conversation. She talked about how she and Ed were very intentional about setting boundaries, and you referred to boundaries a few minutes ago. They wanted to be a couple first, rather than think of themselves as a pastor and wife, and they wanted to be a Christian family first rather than a pastor's family. And I'm wondering how often you've seen that kind of thinking occur.
Well, you know, John, it really depends. And honest, you know, young couples that have been in ministry 15, 20 years, 25 years, like Ed and Lisa have been, I'm not so sure, but they're not better managers of their home and time and family than some of us who have been going at it for 30 years or 40 years or whatever the case may be. Because in our day, you know, they used to pat you on the head and said, God bless you, go out and build the church, and God will take care of your family.
That was really what was communicated.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, the priority was God, church, and family, which now it's God, family, and church, we hope. And so that's why Lisa's comments were so encouraging, because she and Ed learned how to set those boundaries early on in their ministry. And I'm telling you, if you don't learn how to set those boundaries, then there's shipwreck. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't always wreck the ship necessarily, but there's always some difficulty. And they were able to maintain a healthy balance between ministry and their family. And he's got a mega church. Now, here's the difference, too, and I hurry so that you can go to the next segment. See, a lot of pastors think that if they only had a great big church, life would be easier for them. And you know what? They're right. Because pastors of great big churches have staff members.
Yeah, they don't have to do it all.
And they have support systems. And many of them don't even go to the office. A pastor of a medium to small church many times is a solo pastor and has to do everything themselves. That's when the pressure really begins.
Well, Lisa Young is just the first guest in our lineup for this edition of Pastor to Pastor, and we'll encourage you to stay with us for the next segment of this program.
I know we were called to the ministry, but the pressures do wear me down sometimes. I miss my husband. Seems like he's never home.
It's busy, no question about it. I have my own job, and then I help here and there at the church, and I take care of our kids, of course.
I have many fond memories. The churches we've led have always been so good to us. But you have to make some sacrifices along the way.
Those represent the kinds of comments that we hear from pastors' wives, describing the unique challenges that they and their families face in full-time ministry. I'm John Fuller, welcoming you back to our second segment of Pastor to Pastor with Reverend H.B. London, Jr.
John, you know, one of the biggest problems that pastors' wives talk about to me is the sense of isolation. It's difficult for them to find somebody that they can really talk to, that they can really call their friends.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, Beverly, felt that at times she couldn't trust anybody. And then when she had a husband who was a workaholic during my years as pastor, I know that there were times when she and the kids were really lonely. You know, and that's why we've devoted this program today to the challenges that pastors' wives are facing. But Pastor to Pastor is not just for the wives in this edition. It's for the pastors. I hope every pastor will listen to this, because we want the dear ladies to know that they're not alone. But what we also want is the dear pastors to understand that they're the ones that should be the company to these wives who feel so lonely.
H, I so appreciate your heart, and there's a confidential prayer line that you offer to pastors and their family members if somebody wants to talk through an issue or just request prayer for their situation. You have a team of pastoral counselors who are available for that.
We really do, John. You know, we have that toll-free number, 877-233-4455. They put it that way so I could remember it. But we also have an online community where pastoral families, and just we get a lot of interaction from just pastors' wives who they can write and on this website, and then they can get feedback from other pastors' wives. And on this edition of Pastor to Pastor, we're hearing from a powerhouse team of pastors' wives who are helping us navigate some of the joys and challenges of ministry life. But we'd also like to hear from a lot of the pastors' wives that we're talking to right now. And they can do that on parsonage.org, the website there, the online community. They can respond to what they're going through and maybe how we could help them a little better.
Well, let's continue the conversations here. Our next guest is probably best known for her writing and speaking as a life coach. Becky Tirabassi is the CEO and founder of Change Your Life Incorporated, and she's appeared on numerous national media to address topics of prayer and leadership, balanced living and parenting, and she is a dynamic speaker. Becky is also the wife of Dr. Roger Tirabassi, who serves as a premarital pastor and counselor at Rock Harbor Church in California. The Tirabassis often team teach at nationwide marriage conferences.
Becky, it's a delight to have you with us on this edition of Pastor to Pastors. Whenever we do a segment on pastors' wives, we seem to always get a lot of response and there's a lot of interest. Bev and I served the church for 31 years. I was a senior pastor for 31 years before we came to focus on the family, and I often joke that I came kicking and screaming. She came laughing and leaping and praising God because the change was something that she really needed. You've been a pastor's wife for a long time, and you probably have tried to find your role. I know you're an author and a speaker, and you travel a lot, but you still have a role as a pastor's wife. What does that mean anymore in this crazy world we live in?
I think a pastor's wife is like any wife. You have to be supportive and loyal and prayerful and confidential, one who comes alongside. And I know in my husband's life, one of his favorite gifts about me is my faith. Mm-hmm. And that I have seen in my life, if I fuel him with my faith, his role is a lot easier.
And so part of it is to hold up his arms in the midst of the battle.
Yeah, and it is a battle.
Just to encourage him and say, you can do it.
But being on his team.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he'll not tell me what happened at church because mm-hmm. he knows I'm going to go get crazy on somebody yeah. like a bear. You know, yeah. he can't tell me, or I'll say, don't tell me this stuff. Don't tell me this stuff. So not so much the confidentiality of being able to come home and not speak nicely about yeah. someone as much as let him. I think my husband always wants me to encourage him, yeah. not take him away from his role at the church.
Yeah.
And so I have to kind of find that place in me sometimes.
You know, a lot of pastors even, I think, have unrealistic expectation for their wives, mm-hmm. since we're talking about pastors' wives. And when we do surveys with pastors' wives, at the top of the list always is the unrealistic expectations. And I'm sure that you can't live life without some expectations that you're not looking forward to or able to deal with. But when you think about unrealistic expectations in your life, in your husband's life, as you've moved through these years in ministry, what does that really mean to you? What is an unrealistic expectation?
Well, HB, I'm a bit of a tough cookie. You know, I think I was from the beginning. So one of the issues, I think, is time. Is his time my time? Are we yeah. to be at all the same meetings? Am I to be there just because he's there? And I think we found the win-win when he presented my time to his staff or board or church as coming from him, mm-hmm. not from me.
Yeah.
And it was something we both would have talked through, and it was different at different stages when I was a mother of a toddler compared to now. You know, he'll ask me, will you pray with me at the crosses afterward? Mm-hmm. It's his responsibility. He's on the paid staff. He has to be there Saturday night. So he's asking me. No one else is asking me.
Right.
And I hear it in his voice. I need you.
Yeah.
And I'm tired. And I think, okay, I'm doing this for you, mister. You know, but no one yeah. at the church has asked me to do that. Though some of the pastors will walk by, hey, we need women to pray. Will you do it? And at that point, it's a different responsibility. Someone else has asked me. When my right. husband asks me, I pretty much have to say yes.
And so you've been able to pretty well, not build a box, but you've been able to pretty well find a way to insulate yourself from what others are saying and others are thinking and others are expecting and depend more upon what your husband Roger is thinking and saying and needing.
You know, maybe give you a little background. My husband called me into ministry. He identified my call as an evangelist.
Uh-huh.
At which point, how is he going to get 10 years down the road and say, no, you're not going to do that anymore?
Yeah.
You know, so he fanned the flame of my spiritual gift and loves that part of me. So we did a lot together in Youth for Christ in parachurch ministry as a team.
Yeah.
When he went to work for a church, we had different roles and responsibilities, and we had to find new boundaries. And each time, I think we're good at saying, what is your role to come alongside me?
You know, I really relate to how you and Roger handle that, because many times I would stand on the pulpit or whatever on a Sunday morning or evening and just kind of clarify what I saw Beverly's role to be as we move forward the next 3 months. You know, we had kids playing basketball or whatever, and she had these interests, and this was going to dominate a lot of her time.
I think quarterly is awesome. Quarterly, something always changes. Summer, vacation, holidays, the age of your children, an expectation, you know, that isn't normal but happened once every 4 years. You may have to take care of a parent. And it is the spouse, you know, speaking in a public way of both your support of where your wife or husband is and, you know, how they you're comfortable with that. You fit alongside of that. You affirm that.
Yeah. And I remember coming out of church one Sunday and Bev and I walking to the car and she just kind of put her arm through mine and said, thank you for doing that today. You don't know what kind of pressure that takes off of me. Because, you know, you want to teach all, I mean, they want you to teach all these things and play all these things and do all these meetings and all the you know, the little.
I would say I love when a wife is affectionate with her husband, whether she's sitting on the pulpit or you took her arm on the way to the car. I think that speaks volumes to all the young people and to all the staff people about whether the person is an outspoken, upfront teacher or not. You're in love.
Yeah.
I like that as well.
And really, if you can make that point, then a lot of the temptations that old pastors go through, you don't have to deal with those quite the same way.
My husband is the premarital pastor at our church. And as soon as he got the job, he started on me. He's like, well, if you could just speak once out of the 5 weeks. I'm like, oh, you know, it's Saturday morning. Yeah. I'm not on the road. I want to sleep in. And he's kind of talked me into it every single time. And what I hear is kids come up to me at church a couple weeks or months later. We hear from him the whole time, and when you come in, we get the real, you know. Or they love seeing, they say, your husband loves you so much. And I'm like, really? You know, he must talk about me like I'm the greatest thing under the sun. I think, well, I'll let them think that, you know.
But that is such great advice. I know that you coach people, and probably Roger does too, but how about these boundaries? You know, the boundaries, when you said you had toddlers at home, that was a different kind of boundary. And then the kids got older, and I don't know where your kids are now, but it's probably a different kind of boundary. You're able to deal with more things than you would have before.
You know, I don't know if this was a brilliant stroke of what happened, but we both worked for Youth for Christ when we got married, and I got pregnant shortly thereafter, and I took a volunteer position. That allowed me to give as much time as I wanted to, and no, it didn't bring money into our, you know, family income. But when I had to stay home, when I wanted to stay home, when a child was sick, no one could expect anything more of me than what I gave as a volunteer. Yeah. That was beautiful. When I started to work for a church and my son was playing Little League and I realized I was making less money to miss a Little League game than I was willing to make, I said, well, I got to cut my hours back here because I want to go to that Little League game. And there was this sense of our family, and I think I have a non-traditional marriage from the standpoint. My husband, with his doctorate and his master's of counseling, took a part-time job when I traveled as a youth speaker so that he would be the at-home parent. He was committed to our child will have an at-home parent. And it was just for a season, and I say it kind of spoiled him. I haven't seen him work full time since then. No, no kidding. But he, you know, he's a pastoral counselor, and he used those gifts during that time to not work weekends, which pastors normally have to do.
And so boundaries change. They change
all the
time, according to your schedules, according to the household, according to what your financial needs might be.
HB, we were first married. My husband was late for dinner so many nights. In the beginning, I really became jealous of his ministry. And he sat down with me, he said, I will leave ministry if you feel this way. And I knew that would be terrible. Yeah. So we have to find a win-win here. And because he's a counselor, I think we've spent 30 years, you know, reaching for that win-win. So we're both still in full-time ministry.
Yeah. You know, this takes a kind of a really quick right turn here, but it just dawned on me that in a pastor's life, there are a lot of other women in a pastor's life. Usually you have a female assistant, and then a lot of the church staffs are made up of females. And then a lot, most of the counseling are women at first anyway, until the guys get to trust you. And as a result of that, men have a tendency to buy into the affirmation that other women give to them. You know, you listen so well, or I've never had anyone that understood me the way you do, or that it's such a comfort to come and talk with you. And all of a sudden, that can become pretty heady. And what I deal with as a pastor to pastor a lot as I travel the country, I see a lot of pastors, they're not in some full-blown affair. I mean, they're not having sex and all that. But there's an emotional tie to these women that almost comes between the wife they love more than anything. But there's this pressure, this emotional pressure to tie into these other women. How do you deal with that?
Well, over the years, and I have a really conservative husband. So over the years, as we've gotten older, all the staffs have gotten younger. But the practical ways we and our staffs have implemented the boundaries include no meals alone with another, a person of the other sex, no car rides alone, not even a drop-off, no closed doors if you're in a meeting with a gal on staff in your office without another person in that room. The kind of funnier ones are, my husband has never told another woman that she looked pretty or cute. Uh-huh. And I, you know, one of these wives, as I got pregnant, I went up like 50 pounds. And, you know, my husband would say, "Ooh, don't sit on my lap. That hurts a little bit." And but I never felt like anybody was ever cuter than me or he loved them more than me. And that, it's not silent. I think it speaks loudly to all the young staff around him. And he's like the senior citizen on our church staff. But we both have this very old school way of being only eyes for the one we're married to and very practical on how that plays out.
And really, that's another kind of boundary, isn't it?
Yes. What you speak, how you look. You know, my husband would say after we first got married, he goes, "You're flirting." I'm like, "Flirting? What do you mean I'm flirting?" He goes, "The way you look at that high school boy." I'm like, "Okay, you're crazy. You're possessive. You're," he said, "you cannot look at a young man that way." You know, I told you, I'm married to someone very conservative. But he was retraining me to say how you look at a boy or a man influences what they're thinking. So, and I'm friendly. He'll say, "You're way too friendly." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" So I've had a lot of having to really make sure that a person gets clear signals from me.
And just kind of draw back sometimes.
Yes. And always talk about my husband as, you know, I just spoke at Biola in front of like thousands of kids. Yeah. And I'm just telling him how great my husband is and he loves me so much. And I said, and he like really loves me. And they laughed so loud and they loved hearing it. It builds confidence in them that you can be married 30 years and passionate and in love and clear your boundaries in terms of marriage and ministry.
Becky, you know, as you talk, I mean, it's obvious that you and Roger have this good thing going on. There are a lot of pastors' wives out there, because we hear them on our toll-free care line every day, who just say, "Man, I'd love to be treated better. I'd give anything if he just respected me more than he does. Sometimes I feel like he doesn't even know I'm around until he needs me." And then we deal with a lot of pain because a lot of these marriages don't make it.
Right.
And the other thing, a lot of these folks are in really small churches. You know, their husbands are bivocational, so they really have two full-time jobs. And they're having to work outside the home, the ladies are. And then they've got two little kids. And then it's Sunday always, and it's Wednesday night always. And they just want somebody to say, "Treat me like I matter." Mm-hmm. And a lot of this may be their own imagination, because, you know, we can start feeling sorry for ourselves. But I suppose and I imagine that a lot of it is reality. If they could get out of the ministry, they would opt out in a second.
I've met people who have gotten out of the ministry, and their marriages have gotten better.
Yeah.
I think you have to protect the marriage. And I almost sit here and feel like you're talking to the wrong person. The man, the pastor, has to hear this from men. Has to hear this from other pastors, has to feel the conviction of your, and this is why I have a great marriage. My husband has always treated our marriage as the most important gift God's given us, not his spiritual gift, not his role as executive director or pastor, but our marriage. It impacts
how our children, our child, thinks of us, how those around. I feel we live in a fishbowl, and we always have, but in front of God first. And so this guy is the same person at home as he is in public, and that's probably more the issue. There's a lot of people who are not the same in both places.
Last question. Have you ever come to a place, because you all have been in this quite a while now, have you ever come to a place where you you wish maybe that you weren't a pastor's wife, or that Roger was doing something else that didn't have a connection to the local church?
When I was younger, I was very frustrated. Yet, I sensed my husband would do what was best for our marriage. So we always, always, always hung in there. You go through swings, I think.
So they shouldn't feel guilty if they feel that way, right?
But there's also a call on your life, I believe, as a married couple. And it's really getting in front of God, on your knees. What are you calling us to? And sometimes one guy's gutting it out harder than the other for part of that call. I think if you're an at-home mom and you want to be with your husband at church and you can't, you can't. And that's hard, especially if you're someone like me that wants to teach the Bible study in front of the high school girls. Yeah. It's really together saying, what is God calling us to? What does he want for us? And feeling like you're a team in that.
As you look back over all this, was it the schedule that gave you the greatest challenge, or balancing the demands of the church and family, or always having to be up and on, or maybe dealing with criticism that would inevitably come?
Well, I think, as you said, that one thought came to mind. Yeah. For 30 years I've been in ministry. I worked for a church for 1.5 years. Huh. That's it. I could not work in a church. I felt a mess. Yeah. I was an evangelist. I felt there was so many ways I couldn't be me. On the other hand, my husband works in a fabulous church right now, and I am just a pastor's wife, and I see in many ways that my consistency, my love for him, my love for the younger pastors, my willingness to pray, to speak truth into their lives, to be a friend, to affirm is basically kind of paying back. I know you're paying your dues, you guys. I know this is hard. It's saying, this is hard. Mm-hmm. Being in ministry is hard. It's like being in the army. You're fighting. So those of us who can support and be encouragers should do more.
Amen. Becky, thanks for taking this time to be with us.
You're welcome.
This is Pastor to Pastor with Reverend H.B. London, Jr., and I'm John Fuller, and we really appreciate those encouraging words from someone who's been there, Becky Tirabassi. And if you'd like to learn more about her, the website is simply BeckyTirabassi.com. That's Becky, and I'll spell the last name, TirabassiCom. Now, it may be that the subject matter we've already shared has stirred up some concerns about your own marriage or family situation. And if that's the case, let me remind you about our Pastoral Care Line, which is a confidential, toll-free ministry that we offer to pastors and their family members. And the number is 1-877-233-4455. If you have a need, we'll encourage you to make that important phone call today. We have one more interview for you coming up on Pastor to Pastor. Reverend H.B. London and I look forward to having you join us in the next segment.
Hey, John, you know, we call this series Pastor to Pastor, but we know that a great number of pastors' wives listen in. And as I crisscross the country, there are so many times that a pastor's wife will say, on the way to this conference, we listened to 3 editions of Pastor to Pastor.
Oh, that's great.
And I say, how in the world could you do all that long? But anyway, but some of them listen even before their husbands do, and they make sure that their husbands listen to a specific segment. And much of what we share on this series pertains to the whole family anyway, so this is a great opportunity for me to spend just a few minutes with some great ladies, not just here in the United States, but all around the world.
Well, you know, H, I'm thinking as we go through this program that we probably could put a special title to this edition of Pastor to Pastor Out. We could name it something like, oh, Pastor's Wife to Pastor's Wife. We're getting such great insights from these ladies. And you have such a heart for those pastors' wives. And I know that you really try to reach out to them in some special ways, including an occasional retreat for pastors and their spouses.
John, thank you for that. We do. You know, I was married to a pastor's wife. My mom was a pastor's wife. My grandmother was a pastor's wife. My great-grandmother was a pastor's wife.
Goodness. A heritage.
It's almost overkill, to be honest with you. But, you know, from time to time throughout the year, we have pastors' gatherings where we invite pastors and wives to come for half a day. But mm-hmm. we also have retreats for pastoral couples just so they can get a break, some laughter and lots of encouragement. Why? Because to be honest with you, they're my heroes, and I want them to have the very best. And sometimes they don't get the very best.
Well, let's make sure we hear a little bit more about some of those special outreaches that you and your team have to pastors and their wives. Right now, though, we're going to turn our attention to our third and final guest, Marilyn Blackaby, and she's married to Dr. Henry Blackaby. For 30 years now, she's been a pastor's wife, and she is a popular speaker at women's retreats and those Experiencing God for Couples conferences you've probably heard about. Marilyn is the mother of 5 children, and she's delighted to be the grandmother of 14 grandchildren.
Well, what a delight it is to have on this edition of Pastor to Pastor, Marilyn Blackaby. So many of you know Dr. Henry Blackaby. Well, you've read all of his books, and you've probably heard him speak a lot of times, but so often the wives are in the background, so to speak, when really they're the engine that drives the train. But Mrs. Blackaby has written a book, Experiencing God Around the Kitchen Table, and she did this with her daughter-in-law, I believe, or with your daughter, is that right? Yeah. Well, Mrs. Blackaby, thanks. We're talking to thousands of pastors and pastors' wives right now, and we think that that audience is one that really needs to hear what you have to say. I know that you've been a pastor's wife. You've got pastors' wives in your family. When you think of being a pastor's wife, or when you think of what is a pastor's wife, what are some of the pictures that just come to your mind, maybe positive and negative, but when you think of a pastor's wife, what do you think of?
I think of it as being the most exciting thing that could ever happen. I had pure joy at the thought of becoming a pastor's wife, and although I learned the other side, the joy always carried me through.
Yeah.
It's joy and it's privilege. It's demanding. And you're open for criticisms and all. But I found that the advantages, that if you love the people, they will love you.
Yeah.
And I've always found that love for the people and respect for their pastor and his wife. And not everybody has that. I mean, I've been in reality too. But most of them will have a respect for you. If you're doing what God wants you to do and you have a relationship with him, then they will sense that, and you'll have privileges that you would never have in any other walk of life, really.
Mrs. Blackaby, I know that you've been a homemaker and a pastor's wife, and you mentioned a very important thing, that if you love people, they're going to love you back. I really do believe that love begets love.
Yes.
But when you and your husband were in the ministry, and as you've looked at some of your family members and that kind of thing, what was the greatest challenge you faced, do you think, as a pastor's wife?
I think the greatest challenge was really knowing what God wanted me to do. And when I was doing what God wanted me to do, and I spent time with him, then I didn't have trouble with the people. You know, they want me to start a ladies' Bible study class. They wanted to separate a class and make it into two parts and me teach half of it. Well, the ladies didn't know me, and they did know their old teacher, and it was chaos. And so I told him, I said, okay, let me find my own class. If you feel like I should teach adults, I will, but I'll find my own class. I went and I picked up all of even deacons' wives, people who hadn't been in Sunday school in years because they didn't feel comfortable going. And they all ended up in my class, and it was a fabulous class. But if I had have just not been close enough to the Lord to know what he wanted me to do, I would have had sheer trouble.
And so what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense to me, that don't just forge ahead, as though you're going to change the world. You got to be patient and wait for the Lord to lead you.
Oh, that's true. And yeah. If he's not leading you, you better not do it.
You know, one of the things that we struggle with among pastors' wives as they talk to me is they struggle with their own sense of identity, maybe spiritual identity in one place, but just being the pastor's wife in another way. And I know that, you know, Dr. Henny Blackaby is synonymous with the church and writing and devotional life and all these kind of things. And he's blessed me in a lot of different ways. And he's been on Pastor to Pastor two or three times. But how are you able to work through that feeling of maybe I don't have the same worth and value because my husband has such great standing in the church?
Well, I've always known who I was. I was God's child. He loved me. He saved me when I was 5 years old, and I was very ill, and my mother told me God saved me for a purpose. So I grew up with a sense that I was important to God, too. And yes, my husband, sometimes I thought, was all the spirituality on his side.
Yeah.
If anything happened to him, yeah. Would I have anything?
Yeah.
You know, who would I be? What did I represent that was different than my husband's? And I realized that I had to tend to my own spiritual life, that I had to know what God wanted me to do. I had to be a growing Christian. I couldn't rest on my husband's laurels. I had to be who I was. My children would call and they would say, "Mom, get Dad to pray for such and such." And then the day came when they called and said, "Mom, I need you to pray for my friend."
Yeah, wonderful.
And I realized that even my children realized the difference in me. And when people see in your church life, I found that I had wanted to be a missionary. I had done everything. And here I was only taking care of my house, taking care of my husband, and answering the phone. And I asked God one day, I said, "Tell me, you call me to be a missionary. All I do is wash dishes and clean house and take care of children.
Yeah.
Is this missions?"
Yeah.
And the Lord told me, that was my mission for then.
But I understand you found a ministry in your own backyard with kids in your neighborhood.
Oh, I did. You see, God showed me that this was my mission right now. And the exciting part was when you have five children, four boys, everybody wants to play in your yard. And so I had a ton of kids that I got to witness to. I got to help, love, be their friend. That was my mission field. And until that point, I had been overlooking the mission field God had given me.
Huh.
And it was such an exciting thing to realize that just because I couldn't go start Bible studies every night or I couldn't do this and that and the other, I could reach those children that came to my yard every day.
And I really do believe that for pastors' wives or any of us, that when we find that mission field, that's one of the most exciting realities in the world.
Oh, yeah. At that point, when I started looking where God wanted me to look, I didn't feel sorry for myself anymore. And I got to be creative. I would make cinnamon buns, and I would have the kids come in and eat, and I could talk to them about Jesus. I could talk to them about anything I wanted to, as long as they had plenty of cinnamon
yeah.
buns.
Yeah.
But it was my creativity in working with those kids that I got my joy. And yes, it was work.
Yeah. I noticed in your book, Experiencing God Around the Kitchen Table, that Focus on the Family published, by the way,
yes.
that you have a message for moms that's really not that popular, that God may want them to stay home with their kids rather than pursue a career and work outside the home. And what have women said to you about that? I mean,
You know, I haven't had a single woman say anything to me about it.
Really?
But I guess because I always say, some people, God doesn't intend to stay home. You have to know God well enough to know what he wants you to do. And I think sometimes we've sold the girls short. I mean, I had no money. I had nothing to work with. But the welcome lady, when we went to Saskatoon, gave us a 20-pound bag of flour. And I learned to bake bread. And I learned to do things creatively that helped save money, you know.
Yeah.
And I was... some women simply do not know how to be homemakers, so they have no joy from it.
Well, let me ask you this. We live in a different day, of course, than when you were in Saskatoon, and everything you see and everything you read is pull yourself by your bootstraps and be your own person and establish your own destiny, and you can't trust anybody anymore. What do we say to these young ladies in the ministry to now who are 25 and 30 and 35 who've never baked anything in their lives, much less bread? And what do we say to them about their role?
Well, you know, you would be surprised how many young girls I have making bread now.
Oh.
We all have bread machines. You know? It's not quite the work it was when I was young. But we sometime, one time this lady was crying because she didn't want to go back to work. She was in a conference I was in. And I said, tell me, do you really want to stay home with your child? Do you really feel God wants you to, or do you want to go back to work? Well, she really wanted to stay home with her child. So I sat down with a pencil and paper and helped her see where she could stay home with her child. And she was, it involved selling a car. It involved several things. And I told her, you know, how to go about cooking. There's a lot of us more mature ladies who would love to help some of these young girls. You know, back when I was young, it was an old lady in our church that taught me how to make bread, that taught me how to sew, that taught me how to do all kinds of things. And we're not tapping into these more mature ladies that know how to do these things.
Well, really, that's the message of Titus.
Yes.
That the older help the younger and vice versa. Hey, let me ask you this. You had all those kids and your husband was going like crazy and you were out in the backyard cooking stuff and all. How were you able to establish healthy boundaries for your family in the midst of all that? Did you ever turn off the phone or did you ever just say, nobody's welcome in our house until we get this done? And how did you keep track of everybody?
Well, our phones didn't turn off that easy in those days. I've often said, you know, at least during a meal now you could just turn the phone off and unplug it. I would also say that you need to be careful to return all the messages that are come in during that time. Actually, I probably wasn't good at forming boundaries like that because we all had the sense that we were on mission for God and that people needed us. They needed a father. There were times like, I remember one summer, we had a wedding every weekend, which meant that our family didn't have a time to go away for on a vacation.
Yeah.
And we restructured the next summers, but I certainly wasn't perfect at it, and I certainly, looking back, can see where I could have done things differently.
Well, let me ask you this. Did your kids, did they kind of embrace this, that their dad was kind of a shepherd and you were his helpmate and all that kind of thing? Did
they
embrace
did.
Ministry?
They did because they realized they were part of our ministry.
Yeah.
We had 10 little people in our church when we went to Saskatoon. Now, and without our kids, we could have never gotten a Sunday school together. And they were the youth. The youth department was run from my kitchen. And they felt as committed to being missionaries and their spot in the school, in the church, whatever we did, they felt a part of it too. I'll never forget when my daddy was a very active deacon in our church, and he told me one time when I was on the verge of complaining that at least my husband got paid for what he enjoyed doing. And that always kind of stuck in my mind, you know. My daddy was gone all the time to church. He was gone as much as my husband. My father was gone, and we were in the same church for a little while. And I just realized that we were so privileged because we didn't have to have another job to support ourselves. Now, it would have helped, maybe, but it never really, our children were a part of our ministry, and they were very active in it.
Hey, you know, finances is always a big thing. Here at Focus on the Family in our pastoral ministries at our toll-free care line, we just get call after call about pastors who are struggling financially. And I understand that when you and Dr. Blackaby were younger and your family was growing, you had to do without some things during your years in ministry, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, even when we had like four children in university, we were making $20,000 a year. And we didn't have any extra money. Our daughter never had a bicycle of her own, one that would pass the inspection at school. But you know, our kids didn't miss out on very much. They were happy. We had fun. We were all creative. The kids all, from the time they were young, the men of the church would hire the boys to do things. We built our church building, and after that, the boys were forever with the job. We taught our children to work. One of the good things about not having much money is that you teach your children how to work and how to be creative. And even though they didn't have every game in the world like the kids do now, they made up their own games, and I've seen neighborhood games that they made up in our basement go for 2 and 3 days with the same kids trying to win this game. You know, I think we give our children too much.
Oh, what a great thought. You know, last question to you, Mrs. Blackaby, and I really thank you for you taking the time to talk to Pastor's Wife literally all over the world.
And, oh, I love doing that.
And when I listen to you, I kind of get the impression that, you know, you've had some really positive experiences as a pastor's wife.
Oh, I have.
But thing I hear from so often as I travel the country, and I'll be heading off here in a week or so with a lot of different opportunities to talk to pastors and pastors' wives. Man, they come up, and these pastors' wives, they got tears in their eyes, and hate may be a strong word, but they feel alone, they feel isolated, they feel wounded, they feel disparaged, they feel underutilized, they feel like that they're just a number on the door somewhere. What do you say to one of these ladies who feels so overwhelmed by this experience that they would just say, well, what if my husband would just leave? He could sell cars or shoes or whatever. Just get me out of here. What do you say to them?
Well, I tell them to talk to the Lord about that. They have to get permission from the Lord to go on from the next step from that. They can't. Their relationship to God is not in the right place. But you can't really tell them that. But you can ask them some questions that can lead them in that direction. And you've got to help them to understand that, see the funny side, and help them to know how to talk to their husbands. Their husbands got, you know, are they not caring for their wives? Their husbands, are they not talking together? If she's in this state, how's he pastoring that church?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm sure that he goes home with a heavy heart, and many times he stands in the pulpit with a heavy heart.
Yeah, and how can he get a word from the Lord if he hasn't taken care of his wife? Huh. Henry and I now, in the early days, back when we had little kids, we talked every night about what was going on and how God had talked to us and how he was leading us and so on and so forth. And I might have been lonely and feeling like the total weight of the children, the house, everything was on my shoulders. But I knew that God was using my husband. And I talked to the Lord one day about this, and I said, I need help. I had 5 little kids. One was a baby. I had been very sick. And I was telling the Lord how badly I needed help. And he told me, he said, Marilyn, Henry is doing what I want him to do, and I will help you with the children.
Well, he sure did, because you got 5 children and they're all dedicated their lives to the Lord's service, but you've also got 14 grandchildren, don't you, or more, or what?
Yes, and 2 of them are we're this next weekend, my husband and my son and 2 of these grandchildren and myself are all speaking at Two Rivers Church in Nashville.
So you're going to be at Two Rivers Church in Nashville
this weekend,
yeah.
with our grandsons preaching, and with Henry preaching. Our son ended up had a double booking, and so I'm taking his place. But they love doing the 3 generations together.
That's a great thing. Mrs. Blackaby, thank you for being with us. I hope you'll tell Henry that HB said hi.
I sure will.
And Dr. Blackaby has had such a great influence on my life, and we've been friends and gotten to speak at the same conferences from time to time. And the book is Experiencing God Around the Kitchen Table.
That's right.
That's a good place to start. Thank you, Mrs. Blackaby.
Well, thank you, and we'll pray for you while you're out on this next tour.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Marilyn Blackaby on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. And you can learn more about Blackaby Ministries when you visit their website at henryblackaby.com. And that last name, by the way, is spelled Black, A-B-Y, Blackaby.com. I'm John Fuller, and our host on Pastor to Pastor is Reverend H.B. London, Jr. And H., as we wrap things up, some final thoughts, perhaps, on the topic of boundaries for the pastor's wife?
John, thank you, and it's been great to have you co-hosting with us on this edition. You know, I probably have told this somewhere along the way, but this is our 99th edition of Pastor to Pastor. That covers a lot of years.
Yeah, congratulations on that. That's a lot of great content.
And we're really excited about the 100th edition. It's coming, and I hope everybody will have a chance to listen to it, because we kind of walk back through memory lane and pick up some of the interviews we've had. But Bev and I got married when we were 19 and 20, and I'd been kicked out of school, and she was from a little town and in Central California, and I didn't have anything else to do, and she didn't want to go back home, so we just got married. And then we got our lives kind of squared away, and I answered, surrendered to the call to preach and to minister, and we went back to seminary. And we were the most unlikely couple in the world. Beverly didn't know Matthew from Malachi and really didn't care. And, and I didn't have a briefcase. And so I was carrying books around and dropping them and all that kind of thing. And, you know, we got out of seminary in good time. I don't know how we ever did it, but we went to this little church out in Southern California. It was kind of like an opportunity. I mean, everybody else who had been there was failed and they had just about to close it. So they called me and said,
couldn't hurt to have this guy London come in.
Well, they didn't know me from Adam, but I figured I'd never get another chance. So I went to this little church behind a filling station in Southern California, which was an old house. I mean, it wasn't even a church. They'd knocked out some walls and put some mismatched pews in there. And it didn't really have an office, but it had a big closet. And you know, so they put a board across it, and I could get my front end in, but I couldn't get my back end in. It was kind of like a half office, you know.
I can just picture
it. And I'm trying to make this story short, but in that half office, after I'd been there about a week or so, the Lord began to talk to me about how Bev and I were going to win all of Southern California to the Lord, including Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland in that area. Mm-hmm. So one day I got up my nerve and I went home. We had two kids at that time. They were both small, and Bev was unpacking boxes and she was sweating and everything. And I walked in and I said, Beverly, the Lord's been talking to me up there in the half office. And I was just, you know, and he's been telling me how you and I were going to win all of Southern California to the Lord, including Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland. And I was just wondering how you plan to use your gifts and graces to complement mine so that together we can walk out into this vast wasteland of sin and degradation and win all that area to the Lord. And, you know, the kids were screaming and she was unpacking and she was sweating. And I don't remember everything she said. But in one paragraph, there were the words "snowball in hell."
That didn't go over so well, did it?
I do remember that, and so I just went back to my half office, and that's the way it was for the next 31 years.
Oh man!
I'm joking. But honest, in those early days, the last thing she wanted to be a pastor's wife. The last thing that she just wanted to be a mother. She just wanted to be a churchwoman. And I remember as well as I can sit here and look at you. I remember her saying to me. She said, please don't ask me to do a lot of things I can't do. Mm-hmm. She said, I know there'll be times when I have to do things that I'm not equipped for, but just let me use my best gifts most often. Bev was a musician, and she was a terrific musician, but she wasn't a teacher, and she wasn't a theologian, and she didn't like to go to women's Bible studies and all that kind of thing. She was a musician. And it took me the longest time to ever get that in my mind. But when I finally realized that not only would she be happier, but I would be happier, God would be happier, and the church would be better served if she did what she did best most often, that was the key to that. And I say to pastors listening out there, let your wives do what they do best. I mean, it may not be at all what you have in mind or even that your leadership has in mind, but you've got to set the agenda where your family is concerned. And I promise you, if you will, you'll be happier and so will everybody else.
Well, I appreciate so much what you've just said there, HB, and I'm going to go home and share the advice, not the conversation that the Lord was speaking to me with my wife, Dina. We hope that you've been encouraged as you've listened in to this edition of Pastor to Pastor. And if you'd like to hear more or learn more about the resources that we've collected for pastoral families, then stop by parsonage.org and check out our Pastoral Families online community, which is a great way for you to interact with other families in ministry and to share your thoughts and your advice and to learn from them as well. Now, we mentioned the special conferences that focus on the family hosts for pastors and their spouses, and you can find more information about that when you click on the Pastoral Events link at parsonage.org. And if you know someone, or if you yourself would like to talk with one of our pastoral counselors, we have a confidential pastoral care line. The number is 877-233-4455. We have caring counselors who are available to pray with you and They'll offer you encouragement. Again, that toll-free number, 1-877-233-4455. Well, thanks so much for listening to this edition of Pastor to Pastor, and may God richly bless you, your family, and your ministry.